Richard Archibald. Welcome to Upcoming Disc. How are you doing, sir?
Good. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing fine, and I had a great time last night because I got to watch The Drownsman. It was actually a pretty cool film. Well, I have to tell you straight off, I've seen horror films capitalize on all kinds of different fears, and certainly even drowning before, but I mean, you turn it completely on its head, and I mean, your characters are afraid of drinking water. So you really built on a huge fear of water here. I have to ask you, is there anything personal in there? Because you were also one of the writers. Any water fears yourself you were exercising?
Absolutely. When I was young, I was terrified of water. I'd always go up to the lake with friends, and I'd be that kid that just sat on the end like a little wussy. Just the idea of going into a lake or whatnot and having something reach out and grab you just like that, that feeling of the unknown underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And then just kind of mixing that. I mean, I'm still kind of a little bit of a wussy, but I won't go to the beach and swim out past the much. But I feel like after actually doing research on this film, I feel like I was doing pretty good. Then I kind of freaked myself out again. But I'll survive. But I mean, it's a fear that so many people have.
Sure. And I have to admit, if that's the case, where you have this own fear, you really put yourself to the test, because this has to be one of the wettest sets since Jaws. I mean, there's water everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely, and it was a challenge every single day. And we built the set out in the middle of Mount Forest, which is kind of near Toronto.
Uh-huh.
And it's just it was in the middle of an apple orchard. And we were supposed to film in the middle of summer,
right?
But everything kept getting pushed, so we ended up filming kind of at the start of one of the worst winters that we've had in Canada in decades. So, of course, you know, we're dealing with water every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And dealing with the fact that we were kind of building this whole set on a shoestring budget.
Right.
And we'd go out, we'd kind of build it, we'd test it. It's like, this looks great, awesome, overnight, everything would freeze and just bust all the scenes. We'd come the next day. Of course, we'd fill it up, not have any, and it would start leaking everywhere. And
yeah.
We'd have to kind of, keep filming, keep throwing buckets of water in. But it was a challenge, oh my God.
Well, and what about the cast? It must have been challenging for them as well to be wet and likely cold throughout the film. What did you do to help their comfort level?
I mean, we had, by the time we were getting to like the really, really, really wet scenes,
mm-hmm.
it had dropped, I don't know, 2 feet of snow on us.
Wow.
So just going in there, like we never had any plumbing or anything in the set either, so we'd have to go and fill up, you know, 2 dozen garbage, big 55-gallon
uh-huh.
garbage cans of water, and then put bucket heaters in them, and I'd wake up every hour throughout the night and switch the bucket heaters and try to get as much hot water as we could.
Sure.
Because, you know, even trying to fill up a bucket, like, the actual sheer amount of volume
right.
of water is, like, it's mind-blowing when you actually start dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's so heavy, it's so destructive, and it's so so challenging to actually heat.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we even had, if you look closely enough, we even had water heaters built into the set.
Oh, okay.
That we would just kind of funnel water through, and it would kind of filter from the tub, out of the tub,
mm-hmm.
into two water heaters and back into the tub. Just anything that we could do, but, I mean, you put that in the middle of a, you know, in the middle of a snowstorm, and it's very, very hard to keep warm. So, I mean, we had propane heaters constantly running.
Right.
We did
mm-hmm.
everything that we could, and I mean, they're such troopers.
And I assume that
they were all champs too.
Yeah, I assume there were technical issues as well, issues with continuity, issues with the equipment that you had to deal with all the water as well.
Oh, for sure. Like, I mean, near the end of the film, it basically starts raining in the set. So, just getting around, just everyone being soaking wet.
Mm-hmm.
It was a challenge for sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, there are some great things that came out of it as well. There's, you know, throughout the film, we tried to keep the temperature of the set not too hot.
Right.
Obviously not too cold. We wanted it to be comfortable, but we wanted to keep it at a level that when we took, you know, really hot water, we basically ladle the cast before a take
mm-hmm.
and then start filming, and you would see the steam coming off everyone. Like, so the
yeah.
idea is that it's so, you know, it's so cold down there that, you know, they get out of the water and the steam kind of coming off them, which I think visually was like a really, really nice element. So,
well, I think so too. It appeared to me, at least, that it was when the people would get sucked in the water and come out on the other side and into the drownsman's world, so to speak, that particular environment appeared to be colder. When people would emerge, it was seen that that's when you really saw the steam and they saw their breath and that sort of thing. Was that intentional, or was that just a byproduct of having to deal with the water?
That was something that we didn't really have planned off the top or written the script, but once we started building the set,
it works.
And dealing with water during tests, we kind of realized that there's like a certain temperature. Like if we warm the room up too much,
right,
the steam actually wouldn't come up. So it was about us trying to kind of keep that temperature in a place where, you know, the cast obviously aren't suffering too much. But that was kind of one of the jokes that we had at Fantasia when we premiered it. Mm-hmm. Someone was like, "Oh, the steam looked great. It was so amazing." And we joked that it wasn't steam; it was suffering, suffering that was coming up.
Well, but, yeah. And speaking of that cast, tell me a little bit of how you assembled and worked out the rapport that you managed to get between these actresses.
So we had worked with Michelle Mylott before. We had done a film called Any Social, which was the first film that she had ever done. And after that, we were assembling this kind of all-female cast, and we went through some pretty extensive casting.
Mm-hmm.
But she was definitely, she's so talented. She looks so great on camera that we obviously, she was one of our choices. So she came in as the lead, and then Ryan Barrett was, he was someone that I had grown up with forever. I knew him since grade one.
Uh-huh.
And we were buddies during the first film that I ever did, when I had no idea what I was doing.
Uh-huh.
He was just kind of one of my good-looking friends. You know, he thought we'd put in the movie, so he hadn't acted before or anything.
Right.
Either. So we kind of started the filmmaking journey together, him as an actor and me as a director.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, he's been in almost every film that I've done. And not just because I like casting him, but he's a super talented guy, and he always goes through the audition process and whatnot, and we just wanted the Drownsman to kind of have like this really strong presence. He doesn't actually say anything in the film,
right.
So it's all body language and just kind of creating this presence on camera that, mm-hmm. you know, you can't just walk onto set and create. It's something that, you know, you really need to plan and work hard for and kind of develop on your own. And me and him, you know, watched the Candymans and the you know, Friday the 13th, like, you know, Jason Voorhees, it's like he has a presence to him, just the way he tilts his head, the way he turns,
right.
You know, his movements,
mm-hmm.
They all create who that character is. So I really wanted to make sure that I had someone that I could trust and really work with, and Ryan has put so much into every film that I've ever worked with him on that he was the obvious choice.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about that creature design. I don't know if I'm off base here, but the two references that kind of struck me was the obvious Swamp Thing kind of thing going on. But also, were you a fan of the Kolchak the Night Stalker series back in the 70s?
No.
There's an episode called The Spanish Moss Monster, and there's this creature called the Paramalfay. And there were times that I think Richard Kiel might have even played him back in the days. And I got a little bit of a reminder of that. So you should check that episode out there. I saw...
Yeah, I'm always interested to hear about stuff like this. I always like going and checking that out.
Yeah, obviously what you did is light years away from what they were able to do with a television budget in the 1970s. So he's a much, much, you know, more sophisticated design, but those are the two things that I think I saw in it. So tell me what went into the design of this creature. What were the kinds of things you were looking for? What were the kind of reactions you were trying to get?
Well, I mean, I think the idea, like Swamp Thing was definitely an inspiration. But we also wanted to kind of capture, you know, some other villains, but also kind of have its own presence.
And, yeah.
You know, we looked through a ton of bloated bodies and just kind mm-hmm. of seeing the way skin reacts after it's been soaked for a long time. We had talked about, you know, what a dirty old sock would look like if it was wet in the back of your damp basement for, you know, 10 years,
mm-hmm.
what it would actually grow on it, what kind of, you know, mold.
Yeah.
Just, you know, what happens to anything if you just leave it submerged underwater for long enough. So we kind of had, like, you know, a lot of the skin pigment would leave and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of moss and vines and stuff that are kind of all growing over them.
Yeah.
So a lot of that to it. Jay Gore from the Brothers Gore, who did Monster Brawl and Septic Man and all those films, they were on board for it. And we just worked with them for probably about 2 months, just kind of developing what he would look like. And yeah, then threw in some contact, so it's almost like his eye pigment had had feathered out into the rest of his eyeball. And yeah, that's kind of what we came up with.
Well, and you had the added challenge, I suppose you'd call it, of whatever he had on, whatever he was wearing, whatever makeup and stuff he had, it had to hold up to all that splashing around in the water, and it had to look good with the water. Was that something that took a while to work out?
For sure. I mean, like, it was super difficult for Ryan to have to deal with a lot of that, because it was foam latex, which obviously you go underwater and it's like a light preserver, right?
So, yeah, it just absorbs it.
You know, it's him getting inside that tub. The tub in the Drowsman Lair actually had a tank. It actually had a tank below it.
I see.
So you could actually, like, basically, if you stood in it empty, it would just be the tip of your head that you would be able to see in the bathtub. And this was just so that, you know, the cast could really dive out of the tub, so it wasn't just them setting up every time. So there's a lot of elements that you don't even really think about. In the set. But it was full of tricks. But yeah, we'd have to get Ryan in there. We'd have to get a cinder block and stuff and just weigh him down and wait for the water to settle. And then he'd basically let go and, you know, his whole body would pop up.
Wow.
As if he's wearing a life preserver.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was such a trooper. And there's so many times at the end of the day when, you know, he would walk into the makeup room and, you know, they would basically have to poke holes in him to, like, get some of the water out of the weird pockets that have formed and prosthetics and whatnot. So it was a challenge for sure.
You also developed a unique color kind of palette for the film as well. It's almost monochromatic in times, especially in the Drownsman's world. Where did you get an idea to do something like that?
Well, I think we wanted the Drownsman's Lair to kind of feel like almost like somewhere between a submarine and like a moldy old aquarium. And like as you can see in the film, we had aquariums that were in there, and they're all kind of musty, and we had these dulling spray on them all, and then kind of threw a bulb in behind with a little bit of an algae color, gel on it, just to kind of give a little bit of a glow and a little bit of color, and then everything else was just dark, almost like gangrene, how people's fingers would turn black.
Exactly.
And even on the Drownsman, if you look at his hands and toes, it's like they're all black, as if like gangrene had kind of taken them over a little.
Yeah. That's exactly what I saw.
Yeah, then throughout it, you know, just the idea that at one point this was his basement with the wooden boards and the kind of cement walls that have, you know, just been all textured. Like, you know, when you go into someone's basement or an old basement or an old house that had, you know, water damage throughout it, so you can see all the lines of mold.
So, Drownsman 2?
There's talks of it. I mean, we're going to see how the Drownsman does. You know, we've had a great response from it.
Yeah.
And now the studio is very, very happy with it, and a lot of people have asked about it. And we even have, you know, tons of concepts already written out for it. So I think it was a hard idea to swallow.
Yeah.
At the start, just because it was such a challenge shooting with water. But I would be very excited to do another one.
Well, and it's out next Tuesday from Anchor Bay on Blu-ray and DVD, and we recommend it here at Upcoming Discs, and wish you good luck, and thanks for taking the time to share with us today, Chad.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Hey, listen, you take care.
Okay.